Hi there, welcome to Talk Canicross. I'm Janetta George.
And I'm Gail Walker. We're here today to talk all things Canicross, the fun way to get fit with your dog.
So each month we'll be joined by a special guest or two. We'll hear from professionals, regular Canicrossers, and also dog and human experts in their field. It will be real people and real stories.
So we hope you'll join us, whether it's for training tips, dog talk, or just for fun and encouragement. This is Talk Canicross, brought to you by DogFit. And don't forget to hit subscribe and keep in touch with all things Canicross.
When we take our dogs to the vet for their annual checkup, it's always really good to hear that they're in good shape. And if you're a Canicrosser already, it's normally at that point you have a conversation with your vet about Canicross. Did your vet know what Canicross was? In the past, there's been many vets who have never heard of it. However, it's now changing. And as the sport continues to grow, it's also an activity that many vets now recognise and are seeing the benefits that it can bring to dogs and their owners. We're delighted in this podcast to welcome small animal vet Morgan Bertin, who is also a keen Canicrosser. Having had first-hand experience of running with her own dog, she joins us today with her views and thoughts from a vet's perspective. Welcome, Morgan. It's really good to have you on the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me on the podcast.
Hi there, Morgan. It's so lovely to have you today. And I guess before we start talking about Canicross and immersing ourselves in that, it'd be nice to hear a bit about you first and your dog, Molly. My first burning question is, did you always want to be a vet?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's actually the simple answer. Since I remember, since my earliest memories as a child, I've always wanted to be a vet. Never had an animal. So I think that was part of why I wanted to be a vet, in a simplistic child brain, is I thought if I'm a vet, I'd be around animals all day. And that's me happy.
Makes sense. How did you then go from being a vet and then working with small animals? Because I think that's your specialism, isn't it?
Yes, yes. Mm. Although, in vet school, we do learn about everything. I always wanted to work, with cats, dogs, maybe horses, but I was never going to be a farm animal vet. But yes, I mean, I went the normal route. I am a city person because that's where I was born and raised, in Paris. And then we moved to the US. And then I finished my high school and applied to a vet school. I applied to the UK because I kind of wanted to be back in Europe, but not quite back in France. So I thought that was a nice little, middle ground between the US, where my family was, and France, and I ended up in Glasgow. Okay. And where I did 5 years of veterinary school, and that was amazing. That was amazing 5 years, where it was a huge culture shock from being in a completely different, country, which I've never set a foot in before, to meeting different people, more like from farm background. A lot of my friends, were like working or living in farms. And just learning about every single species. That's something I didn't quite expect when I applied to vet school. And I really enjoyed it, actually.
I guess because you lived in a city, so you weren't probably exposed to a lot of the animals that you were working with. Yeah. Yeah.
Not at all. And also it's living in a city, but also my family culture, they're very, very urban. So, it's not like on a weekend they would take me, to a nice little farms to go and see calves and lambs. That's not really something we did.
But when you were at Glasgow University, was that your first experience then of livestock? Yeah. And farm animals?
For some reason, I guess I should have done my research a bit better, but because I always knew I wanted to be a vet, nothing was going to stop me, even the curriculum that I did not expect. The first few years were mostly actually farm animal and animal husbandry, and it was a shock. We didn't really talk about cats and dogs until the third or fourth year. That was not something I expected. I found the first few years harder because of that than most students, and then I started to feel more comfortable when we started to talk about the things that, you know, I wanted to learn. But actually, it was really interesting. And, you know, I got to really understand how it's important to actually being able to be a wholesome vet who can look after any animals. You know, if I'm in the countryside going for a walk with my dog, and if I see any kind of animal in distress, I know I can help them. So I'm not just, you know, although I mostly see cats and dogs, I've got the training to look after anything. And I think that's the beauty of vet school, really. And that's what I've learned.
Lovely.
Yeah. And you've got quite a lot of skills, haven't you? You know, qualifications around the veterinary side of what you do, because I know that you've mentioned to us in the past that you've done small animal surgery, and I think you do acupuncture as well, is that right?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. I've done quite a comprehensive course in the US with the International Veterinary Acupuncture Society, and it was a 6-month course, and every month we'd go for 3 days and do, like, it was 12 to 15 hour a day course. It was quite intensive. Wow. And it was, we were taught by acupuncture and Chinese medicine expert from all around the world. It was fascinating. It really opened my mind, you know, to a new type of medicine. And it really showed me how it doesn't replace anything. It's just another approach to understand animals' health and human health as well. And how sometimes using a different perspective can help a specific condition better than another way. And I really loved it. Yes, the challenge is to incorporate my acupuncture and Chinese medicine knowledge into my normal practice, which is mostly Western medicine. And I guess it's because it's to educate people really, and owners, and how we can help a different way. So a lot of people will come to me and ask about acupuncture, mostly because they've got like a 13-year-old Labrador that just cannot walk anymore. And they want some, they've tried everything and nothing worked. And now they want acupuncture to perform a miracle. And unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. It can help a little bit, but it's not going to make, you know, a dog with multiple joint disease, you know, walk. Mm. And I wish that people would come to me before that, even maybe before but at the same time as they use other, like when we introduce medication because a dog is limping a little bit, maybe it would be the right time to see whether maybe acupuncture could help as well. But mm-hmm. it's difficult because we don't have a lot of time. You know, we're doing 15-minute consult, and actually I'm quite lucky. Some vets do 10-minute consult. I don't know how they do it. Mm-hmm. You know, and it is quite challenging. You know, ideally, I'd love to be able to run a parallel clinic where I only do acupuncture. But yeah, so we'll see.
Maybe in a few years. Absolutely. Yeah. So after you finished, obviously, your veterinary degree, you obviously decided to stay in the UK. And
yeah.
tell us about your dog and how you finally got your first dog.
Oh, well, you know, I waited a long time because I wanted to really have the perfect life setup to have a dog. I love the UK, and that's where I wanted to be. But I realized as well that when you're renting a property, having a dog can be quite stressful because, you know, it's not that easy to find accommodation that allows dog, etc. And I didn't want to be, you know, have issues like that. So I waited. I just knew it was going to happen. But I just waited the right time. And then I lived in Jersey for a while. Then I went back to the south of England, and I've discovered a place that I just fell in love with, which is why I'm now, you know, in Poole in the south coast. And I just thought, oh my God, this place has everything I want, the sea, the boats, everything. This is where I'm going to live. And really, I needed to come to that point in my life, you know, to have a dog is to be able to say, this is where I want to settle down. So yeah, bought a house. And finally, I told myself, right, I've got the house, now I can have the dog. And that's how it happened. And it's really weird because I knew I was never, ever going to go and buy a dog. Potentially go to a shelter.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I've always trusted that she will just appear, or he will just appear when I realize. And it's exactly what happened. Only a few months after I got my house and I consciously made a decision, I'm ready for a dog. I show up at work in the morning, one morning, and my colleagues say, you better go to the kennels because there is someone there for you. And there was this little Staffy, and she'd just been given to the practice during the night because the owner couldn't look after her anymore.
What color is she? We'll obviously include a picture in our...
Yes, she's beautiful. She's black and brindle. So her body is black, but her little face and her legs are brindle.
And she's called Molly, isn't she?
She came with the name, and she was so full of personality already as a puppy that I just didn't want to change her name because I was, that's it, that's her. She's, you know, that's what she responds to.
So with Molly and your setup, your new lifestyle in pool, like by the sea, sounds idyllic. How then did you move into Canicross? How did you first come across Canicross?
So I don't know if it's the typical way, but basically I love to take my dog for a walk one time a day. But I must say the second walk, I struggled a little bit. I thought it was, you know, it's just a little bit maybe boring, really time consuming. And I thought it would be quite nice if I could include, you know, in her needing to go out, you know, a bit of fitness for myself as well. So naturally, I was I could run with my dog. So I got one of those leads, you know, that you can attach to your waist.
Yeah.
And then, you know, just very, you know, and then attach it to your dog's harness. She's always had a harness. And then one particular time, I remember she really launched forwards because she saw a squirrel. And there is no stopping her, you know, that's her instinct when she sees a squirrel. And it really, that jerking movement on my lower back, I thought that is not right. That is really, I could get hurt like that. So I just went straight home and, you know, put in a Google search, hands-free gear, running dog. I came across DogFit, Canicross, huge amount of material online. Watched hundreds of YouTube videos and realized that there's a whole world out there that looked really fun and exciting and you know, I would love to participate into. So I bought the gear and was set. So really it's like because of I just looked into the gear and the equipment first and then realized, you know, there was all of this Canicross thing I've never heard about. And then I researched, you know, my area, you know, to see if there were local groups. And there were a few. I got a bit looking into it. One of them is Run in a New Forest. I Google it and they meet. It's a huge group. So there's a lot and lot of dogs, a lot of people. I watched the videos where someone was filming like the start of them going for a casual run. And I thought there's nothing casual about that. I can't imagine my highly reactive Staffy in the midst of all of this. Plus, I'm not a runner. I've never really been running. So I'm not, you know, that fit. And all those people look like potentially they could be quite fast. So then I, on that website, it was on the Facebook, I think, I contacted one of your dog fit trainer who was mentioned there called Georgina Havers. So she gave me great pointers. We went for a run together. Molly adores her. So that makes things quite easy. And it really suited us very well because we run in small groups. So 3, 4, 5 dogs at a time. So that's how we started. I'd love to, you know, experience running in a pack at some point.
Yeah, it's a good starting point. And obviously one of the reasons that, you know, our trainers run classes is exactly that, to take people in a structured way and support them. And, you know, so there's no pressure at all, but it means then you learn how to do it. Your dog learns how to do it. And then you obviously join another group or do an event. So, but it sounds like a lovely introduction that you had with George. So really pleased to hear that. Mm-hmm. So obviously from your professional point of view, and I know these are your viewpoints on Canicross, and it sounds like, you know, we still need to be educating the veterinary world that doesn't know this sport exists. But what do you see the benefits for the dog for Canicrossing?
So, I mean, the benefit I see that's close to me is to help reactive dogs improve, you know, in the way they manage life, you know, and when they come across, you know, something that makes them reactive, because that's what my dog is like. And it's caused quite a bit of problem, quite a lot of stress for me, having her, you know, being so reactive. I had people shouting at me, threatening to call the police on me. I mean, completely exaggerated reaction, but still, you know, it stays with me when I go on a walk, you know. Consequently, I was a little bit worried. And I saw almost an immediate difference when I went canicrossing with her, because she just go and focus, you know, on that one thing. And I think it helps her. She's still tricky, like, you know, when you first come and join your group and like there is those few seconds of saying hello to everyone, she looks like a mad dog. Launch and she barks and she looks like she wants to like actually hurt other dogs, which she doesn't, but that's just the way of being. But George is incredibly calm about it, so that helps me as well be less stressed about it and less embarrassed. And then it's only those few seconds. As soon as we start running, she just is in the zone. Like her little ears are back and she's just looks straight in the distance and she runs. And she runs really close to the other dogs and has got no problem. In fact, it almost looks like she's always looking where they are and she wants to get closer to them. But I also saw a difference since we've canicrossed, of how she has improved on her normal routine walks with other dogs. She's just more calm in those first few seconds of encounter to a new dog.
I mean, it's a great way for them to socialize, isn't it? I mean, I've got I've got a similar dog, and Canicross has made such a big difference. So I know exactly what you've been going through, and it was a revolution when I first discovered Canicross. Actually amazing. And the dogs often it's understanding what's, you know, driving that behavior, and a lot of it is, like you said, pent up energy and excitement. And you're right, they run so much better when they're running with other dogs and focused and they're in a safe environment. They definitely keep calm. And you're right, and it's great that you mentioned George is really calm, because that's often a good dog trainers like that as well. They're often, you know, calm, and they and George will understand the dynamics of as a dog fit trainer, which is absolutely brilliant. So you obviously mentioned Molly's the difference it's made for Molly in terms of you know, the behavioral side and mental side. So what about the physical benefits of Canicross as a vet, you know, and also as somebody who does Canicross? Well, what are the sort of immediate things that you think of?
Well, I think it's my first thing is one of the topics I discuss the most often in practice is canine obesity. We see a lot of overweight dogs, unfortunately, and a lot of it is just people not realizing it's not because they they overfeed their dog, but they just don't even know what the dog should look like or should be like for optimal health. And also some of those dogs, although they eat too much, I think they also don't do enough exercise. So, you know, for me, that's one of the obvious positive of engaging into this sport, you know, is to get your dog to do the exercise they require, but in a controlled way.
Absolutely. It is. I think, you know, dog obesity can be as much of a problem as human obesity. And that's this sport ticks both those boxes.
Yeah.
In the veterinary community, we just touched on it. You know, you hadn't heard of it before. Is it becoming more well known now? How is it? You know, I'm mature. I mean, I speak with my vet. I introduced my vet to Canicross because he didn't know about it either. And it seems strange that there is this sport that can benefit both humans and the dogs, but the vet world doesn't seem to know about it.
Yeah, I think I don't know why. No, I haven't met any of my I have got one owner that does run a lot with her dog, but not in a Canny Cross way. I think he's just off the lead, you know, and they walk, you know, run in places where they can do that. But no, I do talk about Canny Cross to my clients, and a lot of them are really interested, but they never heard of it. None of my colleagues do it. However, I did, you know, a quick, you know, search on a veterinary, you know, research paper database, and there were a few papers out there that focused specifically on Canny Cross. Not a lot, but a few. So it's obviously, you know, I think starting to become a thing. And that's good. I mean, maybe that's because there's not, you know, it's not that many injuries, that many problems with Canny Cross compared to other sports.
Well, as you said, yeah. it's a controlled way of exercising your dog. And especially if a dog is coming back from an injury, or it needs to not be running around off the lead. You can walk with the Canny Cross gear on as well. So well, hopefully, you know, as the sport grows, which it is massively, you know, more vets will maybe take part, take interest, and it will grow even more.
Yeah, I'm quite confident it will happen, but things take their time. I mean, when I was reading about it, you know, there is it seems to be much a much bigger community in the US. It seems to be very, very big over there. And in France as well, I could see at least there is a lot of competition happening in France. I think it is, you know, making its way in. It's so easy to take on, you know. It's not one of those sport where like you need the very complicated, you know, equipment, or you need to go somewhere very specific, you know. It is quite easy access for most people. So I think, you know, us people have got, you know, like there's, I don't know if you saw on the news today, but a huge increase in dog ownership over the past few months with the pandemic. Yeah. So, you know, there could be a surge of people taking the sport actually in the next, you know, year or so.
Yeah, well, we've noticed that ourselves. You know, we've been inundated with orders for products and people wanting to either go and do a class with the trainer or do our virtual challenges or online courses. Yeah. So we've definitely seen a big surge over the last 12 to 18 months, and it's just growing and growing. But you're right about the fact that it's quite simple. You just need three items, but there's a lot to it once you get into it, you know, in terms of using commands and getting the best out of that relationship with the dog. But in terms of getting started, I always say it's cheaper than a pair of good off-road trainers, and you can get a go, just hit the trails. Another question we get asked on a frequent basis, Morgan, is about the age of the dog to start canny crossing. Now, we always give the advice that they must be fully grown, and but for the benefit of our listeners, can you maybe go into a little bit more detail about why that's so important?
Yeah, sure. So basically, dogs, as you know, they grow very, very fast during a very short period of time. The growth of the bone itself occurs at a very specific location at the end of long bones. So, for example, if you look at the leg bone, so the tibia, there is two end of that bones, the top and the bottom, and there is a very thin layer of a structure called a growth plate, which is where all the bone activity and the growth happen. This is also a structure that's very vulnerable to impact or trauma whilst the dog is growing. So if this is subjected to too much trauma, it can be damaged. If a growth plate is damaged, it will fuse and the bone will stop growing at this location, which can obviously cause a lot of issues because this bone will stop growing at the same while other bones adjacent to it are still growing, and it will cause problem on the joints that are involved with those bones. So basically, I had a case like that a few weeks ago, a little dog, a little 4 months old Scottish Terrier that injured one of its growth plates. And when I did the x-ray, you could clearly see the fusion. You could see the bone next to it that was starting to curve. And you could see that the elbow was completely normal. And it was only 4 months old. Wow. So that dog is bound to have a problem during its whole lifetime of pain, limping, and early onset arthritis. Now, there is, you know, surgical procedure that can help with that, as long as they're done very early on. But you obviously always want to try to prevent the problem from occurring rather than having to treat it. And although, you know, I think, again, gentle running with your puppy is fine. The problem is I find it safer to just offer a blanket recommendation. Don't run your dog until they're fully grown. They can go for nice walks. I really, I do have people coming in, though, I'd like to say that with their puppies, telling me that they've been told not to walk at all their dog, only 10 minutes a day, and then they increase it by 5 minutes every week. That is crazy. That is wrong. That is completely wrong. In fact, for the correct development of muscle, ligament, tendons, and bone, you do need some kind of exercise. And not doing it will predispose the dog to more problem later on. So they do need exercise, but you have to listen to your dog. You have to watch your dog. When when Molly was a puppy, I could see after half an hour on the beach, I could tell that she was slowing down and that she was tired, and I would take her back home. But I wouldn't play with the ball. You know, I wouldn't encourage any kind of high impact. So I was carrying her in and out of the car. I didn't want her to jump. But you know, a normal run in a field is completely fine.
Yeah, that's interesting advice. Yeah, thank you for sharing that. Yeah,
we're one of the questions, especially with a lot of the lockdown puppies that typically now, you know, 9 months, people, they've got lots of energy, and people, you know, regularly contact us about starting Canicross then, which we don't advise. Because they've just seemed to have lots of energy. But you know, Canicross as a sport, mentally is tiring for the dog, obviously, as well as physically. So they have to be, obviously, as you said, an adult dog. But for those of us that have got dogs that we're regularly canicrossing, you know, one of the questions we're often asked as well is about sort of joint supplements and things that you might want to kind of give your dog to help manage kind of, you know, when they're getting older and a little bit stiffer. Obviously, we're well exercising them. So tell us about your view on that.
Well, my view is based on the data, and unfortunately there is very, very little scientific evidence that joint supplements help with pain associated with arthritis, and even less evidence that it can prevent problems. And it's very frustrating because I would love to give something to my dog thinking that it's going to stop her from having joint problem later in life. You know, the problem with supplement is because they're not considered a drug officially. There is, it's not regulated. Anyone basically can just put something together and go and sell it. And therefore, there is very little research done. And also, veterinary research, you know, is not nearly as good as human research because the market, the pharmaceutical market, is so much smaller. I guess there's one exception to that. There is good evidence that omega-3 fatty acids, so fish oils, are very, very good, and it does have an antioxidant effect, which can reduce, you know, signs of arthritis such as pain and inflammation in the joint. Again, in terms of prevention, I don't know, but that would be what I recommend to my patients when they come and they're older, they've got signs of arthritis and, you know, they're stiff, they can't move as well, and they do limp and have pain. Then I will advise them to go on a diet that's supplemented in omega-3.
That's really good advice.
Yeah, I think of all that money I've spent on supplements.
I've done it too. So I'm actually blatantly ignoring
placebo effect.
Yes, exactly.
They probably understand that.
But no, that's really interesting. Well, thank you so much, Morgan. There's so much that I could carry. We could continue to talk about. We might have to do another podcast because. but you know, really, thank you so much for your time. And it sounds like then you're a big advocate of Canicross. And
yes,
we'd love to hear, you know, from you and Molly your journey and how it's all going. So do keep in touch with us. And
yes, sure.
I will. We'll be entering a race in no time.
Yeah, no. I would love that. I'm really keen to take her on a bigger group, you know. But she might have to wear a muzzle. And yeah, we'll see. But she might love it. She might actually love the competition aspect of it.
Yeah, I swear that the dogs know when you do an event with them halfway round, they look at you and you just know that you're doing it together. So you definitely have a try when all the events and everything are opened up. But thank you so much. As I said, we could obviously talk on longer, but we are going to put a link in the show notes to your blog.
Thank you so much for
thank
having
you.
Me.
All right, take care.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talk Canicross. We really hope that you've enjoyed it. But don't forget to hit subscribe so we can keep you up to date and let you know when the next episode comes out. Happy canicrossing.